This is a Data Science Channel program from the Holly Giolu Data Science Institute. Visit us at ucsd.tv/data-science to learn more about how data is shaping our future.
Welcome to another episode of Science Like Me. Today we have the pleasure of speaking with Courtney Paquette. Courtney is an assistant professor at McGill University in the Math and Stats Department. Welcome, Courtney.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Nice. So you want to tell me, how did you get into this field?
Yeah. So actually, I come from a pretty unusual background. So I did my undergrad degree actually in finance. And then I was taking some courses there, and you get to take these sort of operations research, where you get to learn, like, you know, how UPS puts, like, its planes and stuff. And so you had to learn optimization. And I was like, I wanted to learn more about it. So I ended up taking more courses, which are geared towards sort of the applied math stuff. So like probability and numerical analysis and things. And then I ended up getting sort of involved in that and ended up in a pure math program, completely unprepared. started working with a professor there, and machine learning was starting to take off, and I was like, let's do this. So I ended up doing more machine learning, and so now I'm here, I guess.
I love that. That's awesome.
But I come from finance, if you really want to know my undergraduate degree. So
nice. Yeah. I mean, that obviously includes math, but I love that it was just like you kind of dove deeper and deeper into this.
You know, yeah. And also I wasn't, I don't have like the background of like a person who normally comes from math. So it was really a good experience. I mean, I had to learn a lot on the fly and do what I did. And I think it's made me a better researcher overall because of that.
What, do you remember, like, what was your biggest hurdle when you were kind of transitioning into that?
I don't know if you guys know the pure math setting, but in pure math, they want you to take like very specific courses. So they want you, like, you have to know abstract algebra, you have to know like analysis, and you have to have some like geometry. And I basically entered a grad program having not taken any of those courses at the undergraduate level. And so I was just thrown into a grad school, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to fail. But like, I made it through. Like, once I made it through, I was like amazed. And I think when you have to struggle to like actually just even get through those courses, it actually sort of is how you do research a little bit. Like, you have to struggle a lot. So there's a lot of moments where it's kind of down, right? Things aren't working the way you want it. I think like that made me a better researcher right off the bat from there. So that was the first year of grad school. It's the worst, I think, of my life for getting through schooling. But I did it. I'm here.
Yeah. When you, I appreciate you like describing that struggle. I think that's true. A lot of people don't realize that that actually kind of strengthens you. And I do think that it's almost as if like you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable and pushing through.
I 100% agree with that. Yeah, I think having to learn to like work in sort of this unknown is exactly what research is kind of about. Is like you're never quite sure what's correct, what's wrong. And you have to be creative. And so you have to work with what you have. And I think when you're struggling like that, it can be helpful to sort of learn those skills to be a better researcher.
Did you have anyone that helped you along the way?
Yeah. So I had, so because I was actually in a finance degree and I was taking some math courses, I actually had a professor who saw me in the numerical analysis course. He just passed away. I know. But he had a knack for picking out really talented students, I feel like. Okay. I shouldn't say that. I
didn't care. You are talented.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. He also found a lot of other really talented students. He sort of saw something and he like introduced me to math research. And so then he like pulled strings to get me into this PhD program because I didn't have the prereqs. And so like he definitely was like a true person. And then of course my advisor, who my PhD advisor, he helped me with problems and was always around. But those two have really been amazing for me to get, like, just even to know what math research was at the time. So
I mean, you clearly gritted through this process, right? Do you have examples of when you gritted through that process, let's say in high school or middle school? Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be academic. Like, that kind of skill of grit, Where do you think you learned that?
I grew up as like, my mom is a single parent. She sort of raised me. And so there is, you know, just being single parent. My mom was not really an academic person. So like, you were always expected to go to, you know, just go to college to get a degree so that you could get a job and stuff. So I think like, she made me like, do jobs. So I was actually a bank teller for 4 years. That's how I paid for college.
Wow.
So I had to grit through that, I guess, if that's an example. So I don't know. I mean, I worked through my college and tried to get money to just pay through everything. So
I think that's great. I think that really, like, I mean, I think those things, while they might not feel good in the moment, have actually built that muscle for you to be talented and successful now.
Also, I know how to apply for a home loan. So, you know, like, it's nice. Important skills involved.
Nice. You liked math. You have an aptitude towards math. But what do you have, like, do you have a memory of when you realized you liked it?
So I always really liked playing games as a little kid. And so one of the things I really remember, I was a latchkey kid. So with I figured out how to beat the game Macaulay. I don't know if you guys know Macaulay, this game. Okay, it's like a stone game that you play. You put stones around.
Oh, I do, actually. Okay. I think I learned it when I was in Germany for some reason.
I figured out there's a way that you can always win.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, which is dangerous because I would go to latchkey and I would play and then I would always win. And then I got in trouble because like I figured out the algorithm that you can always win off of.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
So that I fell
don't play that game with you.
I don't know if I can do it anymore. But that's where I was like, I think I first really fell in love with like algorithm stuff, which I realize is not quite math, but it's got that same sort of logic feel to it. And I really love that sort of idea that you could always like have something which is just like a set of instructions that like always gives the right answer and stuff. So,
oh, that's so cool. That's awesome.
I really got in trouble at latchkey for this. So, like, I was told.
I wonder why, though. I mean, it's not like you. It's not really cheating
cheat.
If you figured it
That's
out.
Other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank
I think
you.
They were just jealous or something. They didn't figure it out first, and they're like, "Wait a second."
I mean, it is kind of weird that there's an actual way that you can always win. But
yeah. Oh, that's so cool. That's very cool. Okay, so you're applying for college. You said originally. I mean, you did finance.
Yeah.
When you were applying to college, you know you wanted to do finance?
Sort of. So I was actually a bank teller through high school. So I was kind of in the finance group from that. So I was like, oh, I'll just do that. So I went in and was like, okay, I'm just going to do finance. And then, like I said, I took this course and was like, you know, I actually think the little logic puzzles are kind of fun. So I wanted to do go into more math stuff. Also, because like accounting is, it looks very logical, and then you actually figure out there's just a book of rules, which has totally arbitrary. Like, you know, you treat a computer different than a calculator, and you're like, why? And they're like, well, that's just what it says. So I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. So I decided to go into more on the math side. So yeah,
I think it's interesting. I just wanted to highlight the, you know, this idea that I mean, I love, you know, in trying to identify passions and whatnot, especially with kids. But then sometimes I do think it's like, sometimes you don't know what you want to do and it's also okay to just kind of go for what might make sense right now and then let it lead you to something that is more exciting later.
Yeah, I think I this is one thing I really feel like I learned from college was that you should try things out.
Yeah.
I was not like, I grew up where computers weren't like really a thing. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to learn take a computer science course. And I was like, wow, this is really fun. I mean, it was, I learned a lot while I was in college of what I wanted to do and sort of different things I was mostly interested in and stuff. So,
all right. So let's go back to, you went through college. You have your, you know, you have your PhD now, you go and do your postdoc. Anything surprising along that journey that you didn't expect?
Yeah, actually. So I did a PhD in pure math. I mean, it was an optimization, so it's a little bit on the applied side. But and I was doing very pure theory. And then I actually got an offer to go to Google Brain at the time just a job offer. And I was like, okay, I wanted to do it. So I went to Brain and worked for a year there. It was amazing. Like, I never thought theory would be appreciated in the industry like it was. So it was really cool to see that. And I got to work with a whole bunch of different people more on the engineering side and just hear what they thought and did. And I thought that was really cool. And so for me, that was like a really cool experience to view. So, and yeah, I still work there 20% and I really enjoy it. So I think it's really cool to just like talk and meet with all these different people because you like learn a lot from it and they actually appreciate theory.
Yeah.
Which, you don't think of it from the industry companies, but they actually do.
That's cool. Awesome. Do you know some of the practical applications that have come from this theory?
A lot of it is trying to understand sort of like the phenomenon that you see in sort of deep learning or now in the LLM literature and stuff to try to understand sort of like what phenomenons, like what can explain that phenomenon. But more recently, because of the sizes of these really large models that we see in LLMs, I think theory is starting to become even more important because you can't just try out a bunch of stuff. Like, you can't just like go out there and like train it and run like 18 different tests. It's just too big. Like, you only get one shot at training now. So it becomes more and more important from the theory point of view to actually like say like, hey, you should steer towards this understanding because theory sort of suggests that this might be a good approach. So that's been sort of how my theory has been more influential. And I think it's going to be more influential going forward just because the sizes of these things are getting so, so big that you need the theory to actually direct you a little bit to what is actually even reasonable to test out nowadays. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. You know, it reminds me of, you know, I tell the students that I work with, because I usually work with K-12 kids, right? Back in my day, when I did a neural network, I had to translate this math into this program, into this code, and it would take 7 or 8 hours to compile just to figure out if you're right.
Yeah.
You know, and nowadays, you have Python, you have this library, and it takes a minute. You don't know how easy you have it, you know? But I do find that it's interesting that it's almost coming back full circle, and that, like, because of this high compute power that we have, we've just increased the load.
Yeah.
And now it's like, wait, we have this problem again.
Yeah.
Like, so that's really cool. So that actually is kind of leads to the talk that you're giving for Telos about high dimensional optimization with applications to compute optimal neural scaling laws. Tell me about that.
So compute optimal neural scaling laws are quite new now. And they really just become about because of these huge models. But I think the simplest way to sort of explain it, right, is like in neural networks, you actually get to choose like how many neurons you want or how many layers you want or how the depth. You get a lot more choices than traditional optimization sort of comes from. And so these things are so big and things that what you want to do is like you're really, really constrained now with computing resources. So we just don't have enough energy in the world. I don't know how to explain it more than that, but there's just not enough compute in the world. So what you have to do is you have to sort of say, okay, given a fixed compute budget, how do you actually create the neural network? That's the optimization part of it. So is there how many parameters do you need to choose? How many neurons do you need? So that you actually produce the best answer without it wasting energy, wasting sort of resources and stuff like that. So that's what I'm going to be talking about. And there's not a lot of theory involved in this. So I will talk mostly about the theory side and what we know so far. But like most of it, the work has been done empirically. And people are really, really interested in this because if you can save in compute, you can save a lot of money, which translates from energy. So a big deal if you can do this correctly.
Is there anything that has surprised you in this research that you didn't anticipate? Like, wow, this actually makes things a lot smoother.
So yeah, actually. So the one thing that's surprising, so the the stuff that I work on and the things that the techniques that I will use aren't really from traditional optimization theory. So they come from high dimensional probability, people now statistical physics side. And so there's actually already a bunch of theory built up. It's just like not from the traditional math. It's more from like probability or more from physics. And that has made it a lot easier to do. You just have to apply the techniques to sort of the neural network structures that we actually have.
Nice. So,
yeah. Physicists have now decided that machine learning is theirs because they won a Nobel Prize in it. So they're excited. they've taken over machine learning. They think it's theirs.
That's funny. That's pretty cool, though. There's a couple of directions I want to go into. One is like, where you think the future of this is going? Like, what are you excited about, looking forward to? And then the other one is more of a general kind of like, just out of curiosity, your perspective of the fear that people have in AI. Is that something that you think is more science fiction, or is there a reality to it? Or maybe some of it's science fiction, some of it's reality.
Yeah. So the thing which I'm most looking forward to is, sort of what I really want to do. I really, really want to do is redesign sort of the way we analyze optimization algorithms. So the way we currently do it is basically from like the 1950s. And we use the same thing, but the same techniques. The problem with those techniques is basically that they have no like reality. Like you go and run them and like your algorithm always does better, or all the algorithms are exactly the same, but we only like use a few of them in practice. So what I'm really excited about is sort of like redesigning how we approach optimization algorithm theory and like figuring out, is there a better way that can actually work and explain what's actually happening in practice? And then work with the engineers to really understand what they're actually doing. So that's sort of what I'm most excited about. I really want to change, like, I realize this sounds crazy, but I really want to change, like, how we analyze these algorithms and machine learning. Just, it's, like, super old school and, like, it's just not, they don't have any reality anymore. Like, they don't tell you what's happening, and, like, when you actually go and run the actual thing, so...
I feel like you're the thing that sparked you as a child has like come through your entire journey. You're trying to like game the system and to make it better, and it's amazing.
Well, also I always find like, okay, I don't know, because so I never really learned like the classic like progression in mathematics. But like when you take like a numerical analysis course, it's always these cool little tricks like that computers that you have to use. Because you can't actually just, like, take, like, an inverse of a matrix, right? And I always think that that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's the fun part of it. Like, being creative and thinking outside of the box to make this algorithm actually work correctly and then explaining why it actually works correctly. So, I don't know.
I think people underestimate math as, like, I mean, it's counterintuitive, but it's meant to make things easier. I mean, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know?
Or I also think people underestimate math in the sense of how much creativity there actually is in it.
Like, oh, yeah.
It feels like it's like, there's just like, okay, someone tells you this is the procedure to do, you know, how to multiply two numbers together. But that's actually not true. There's a lot of creativity. There's a lot of, you have to really think outside the box a lot of times. And I think it's most present in like numerical analysis type stuff. Because the algorithms, you can't really use a lot of the pure theory.
Yeah.
You actually have to talk to the engineer, or you have to know what does your hardware look like so that you can actually run the thing. I think it's really cool.
I think that is cool. What if like if you had unlimited resources, which I guess wouldn't have to worry about the compute optimal neural scaling laws part of it. But if you did have unlimited resources, what would you want to dive into looking in?
And the thing I would actually love to do, which it seems kind of weird, but I think it's super cool, is that we're right now at the point where like the LLMs can kind of almost do reasoning and mathematical, like create proofs and things. I would love to make it a little bit more formal and like see if you can actually make that work.
Oh, cool.
I think that would be a fun project.
Yeah.
Not that I know nothing about it, but I think it would be really cool too. It could work.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
It would make our lives a lot easier.
Yeah. I mean, we'd solve so many problems with that.
Potentially.
Or you'd create problems too. Which leads to, do people's fear of AI, is that grounded in science fiction or reality?
you know, it's a little bit hard. I sort of think we've seen a huge amount of progress in it, but I don't think it's as good as people think it is of that at the moment. I think we're still sort of really at the beginning. And I think probably in the end, it will end up being something akin to like a computer, you know, in terms of how it revolutionized, like how we actually work and use it. But I don't know. I actually don't know the answer to it. But I don't think we're like, people make it out to be like, oh my gosh, you're going to take over the world in the next like year. We're probably not there yet.
Yeah. Right? I agree. I think it's a little, their imagination is a little bit more advanced than what it's actually.
Yeah. I mean, it has been, the progress has been incredible. I mean, there's no denying that. But I don't think it's going to like, completely remove all jobs in the world.
Hopefully not. I mean, I guess they've had that fear since the Industrial Revolution, right? But I don't know if this one is different. Like, is it, and then are we approaching it differently because we have that in our history? Like, are we kind of having some, safety nets as a result? I don't know, but let's see. We'll see what happens.
I mean, I think it'll be a tool. It certainly will be a tool. Like, you know, you'll use it to help you code for sure, right? Or you'll use it to help you write. But you use that, like, word processing was also a tool that you can use, right? So I don't know. Probably be something like that. But we'll see. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm excited for it. I think my last question would be, what advice would you give your college self?
So if I had to give any advice, I would say to myself, first of all, to just go out and experience and try different courses. I did it sort of late. Like, for instance, I only took a couple of computer science courses and it was only at the very end. And I think if I had taken it a little bit earlier and I wasn't so afraid of the fact that I had never coded before in my life before I took one, I would have actually probably gone into CS, right? So I think it's like good to just try things and not be afraid. That's what I would tell myself. Like, don't think that when you go into college that you have to be on a certain path, that you can really just explore and experience different fields, different areas, and just really find what you like and what you enjoy.
Nice.
I think that's what I would have said.
Well, thank you again for coming. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you.